Well, once again, it's great to be back. I looked over the last, I looked to the archives of the speakers, and I've been here 5 times in the last 2 years. I taught on the Book of Ruth, the Book of James, the book I brought called For Sinners Only. Been on that. And then on July 30th, 2021, I did a teaching on the parable of Rich Man and Lazarus. I'm going to come back to that here in just a little bit as well. So everybody has a story. Everybody's got where they've gotten. And they've all got a story. My story really began in 1980 when I lived in Miami, Florida. My ex-brother-in-law offered me a job to move from Kansas City down there to Florida. And it sounded like a good thing to do. At the time, I was about 2.5 or 3 years sober off of drugs and alcohol. I was 29 years old and sort of finding my way in the world. So I went to live in Miami. And at the time, I was not a Christian. I was sober and I was excited about life a little bit. I believed in the higher power thing that you hear about, Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that was pretty cool. I believe in that. But as far as any church or religious stuff, that was that really wasn't anywhere on my radar screen. But my ex-brother-in-law was a real committed Christian, and he would take me to church. He was also my boss. So he would take me to church on Sunday. And I like to go because we always went out to some fancy restaurant for lunch afterwards. So I was going to Old Cutler Presbyterian Church in South Miami. And it was a upscale neighborhood, affluent neighborhood, Presbyterian church, but they had an altar call after every service. The guy's pastor's name was Bob Davis. He's passed on now. He had some physical disability or something, but he was a gigantic guy, like 6'4", weighed 300 pounds. And at the end of every sermon, he'd say, "Now, you need to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior." And that's how they ended services. So I didn't go forward. But one of the things I did was I would attend a Bible study that was taught by a lady named Kay, and she was teaching the Book of Revelation. She could stand there with the Bible like this, and she could just quote verses out of the Book of Revelation and do this whole study for an hour, never even open up her Bible. And I thought, this was pretty amazing, this woman that could do this. And I don't know exactly what I got out of it, but what I got out of it was quite possibly might be a place called hell, and I didn't want to go there. So I also had a old girlfriend from Kansas City that lived on Marco Island, which was 90 miles across Florida on the west coast of Florida. So I would go over there once in a while on the weekends and just kind of hang out with her and her husband and her daughter. And they, I would go to church with them sometimes. And they went to this sort of a mildly charismatic church, and they had this traveling Jewish evangelist that was there one day when I was there. And I remember I was in the very back of the church, and it was a small church, probably might have been as big as this whole room right here. And in fact, it's a national a treasure or something that is designated. It's still there, but they built a big new church, a big modern new church. But that little church was just like the size of a 6-car garage or something. It's still there. So at the end of the service, this Jewish evangelist was talking about the difficulty for him coming to Lord. He had to swallow his pride. His family had a funeral for him, and nobody wanted to have any Lutheran in the family anymore. And at the end of the service, he said, "Now every eye is closed, every head is bowed. And if you want to accept Christ, you can come forward." So me and this like 14-year-old girl both went. As soon, he said, "He just slip your hand up." And so I did that, she did that, she said, come on down. So brought us down in front of the whole congregation. And even though that wasn't exactly the way I thought it was going to go, it really was the beginning for me. Because I have an emptiness that most of us have without some spiritual formation. And Christianity started to make sense at that time. And that began the journey of my walk with the Lord. And that was February of 1980. So this coming February will be 44 years since I went forward in that little church in Marco Island. And, you know, since then I got involved right away in different ministries, volunteering for things. The timing was perfect for all this for me spiritually. And in fact, they had a workshop at Old Covenant Presbyterian Church. And Bill Wright, the founder of Campus Crusade for Christ, came in and did a weekend training on how to share the four spiritual law of Kukut. You remember the four spiritual law of Kukut? Yeah. So, and at the end of a couple of days of training, we all went out in the neighborhoods and went door to door with the four spiritual laws. And it's pretty terrifying, really. Because we were also in Cuban neighborhoods. I had an interpreter with me that could speak Spanish, and I couldn't speak Spanish, and he would translate. But you know, it was an experience. It was the beginning. One of the things was to say, they said, just do this with somebody at your job. Just tell them it's just total practice. You don't care about any response. You just want to read this little pamphlet to them. Take about 2 minutes. So I did that, and I was just as nervous as could be. And it's because it was a sales guy in the next office next to me. I just walked over. Hey, can I do this with this? It's a project that I'm doing. And I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but anyway, we both got through it. And you know, it was the beginning of what I've come to believe that I have somewhat of a gift of evangelism, because I've been fairly assertive with that over the years. It was real easy to do in the jail, obviously, but out in a secular community, not so easy, really. One of the things that I did, well, actually, it was August last year, and this has been on my mind for about a year prior to this. And sometimes I get a little frustrated. Why aren't things happening? But anyway, it just didn't happen the way I wanted. But it turned out really, really well. And what I want to do is I want to play. What I did was I told my wife and I told this video crew, I said, look, we're going to go down the Pearl Street Mall and we're going to do man on the street interviews. I want to get 20 people to stop and answer a simple question. And what this is the first 20. Whenever we get 20, we're done. That's it. We'll pack up and leave. It's a beautiful Saturday morning. And we got our 20 people and we packed up and left. But the question I asked people was, when a person's time is up on planet Earth and they step into eternity, what happens next? So here's the 20 people that answered that question. So you got a minute for one quick question? When a person finishes their time on planet Earth and steps into eternity, what do you think happens next?
You're dead. Nothing. The light goes out, you're dead. Lights off, you're dead.
Lights off, that's it.
Period.
Okay.
I have zero idea.
Zero idea.
I think.
What do you think happens next?
I don't know. We'll find out. We'll wait and see.
Just wait and see, okay.
I feel like, you know, just like our soul, but kind of like you recycle through this experience on Earth.
What happens next?
Yeah.
I feel like, I think it's a... I think you're getting a new period. You're becoming, I believe in karma.
But you're asking if there's a spiritual element that continues? I don't know.
Personally, I think people like go back into the earth and either maybe like as a tree or something like that. Like your spirit kind of stays with you.
Okay.
Stays around with the people you love, your loved ones. I grew up religious, so like I could go to heaven, I could reincarnate.
Okay.
I don't know. They just, in my belief, they live in eternity.
They live in eternity?
Yeah.
So
with God.
With God.
That they go back to the light from where they came.
No, I believe that somebody, like, their spirit moves on to a higher plane.
Okay, cool. So what do you think happens next? Do you have an idea about that?
If you successfully complete your mission here, you join with your spiritual family.
Okay.
I hope something goes, but I really don't know.
I go to another place.
Another place.
Another dimension.
Another dimension.
It goes black and you just spawn in as another person.
Okay.
What do I think happens next?
Yeah.
To the person?
Yeah.
Or to their body?
Well, whatever. Just next period.
I would guess like the molecules of their body, you know, return to the earth.
Decompose?
Yeah. And I don't think the person's in that body.
Okay.
I don't know where the person is. I haven't talked to any of them. Have you?
No, I haven't actually, but I'm...
It's a great puzzle. I'm optimistic, yeah. But...
I think they decompose.
Decompose.
In the ground. Yeah, I agree. I think everyone goes to heaven.
You think everyone goes to heaven? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to hell.
So there's the 20 answers that I got. Started out with this big heavy set guy, and you can see this if you go to my website. I'm going to show you how to do that later. The 3-minute video with the audio is really kind of fascinating. Now, a lot of people will say, well, that's just boulder. But, you know, if I would have done this from the 16th Street Mall down in Denver, I don't think the answers would have been any different. If I would have done this in Joplin, Missouri, or Kansas City, or Albuquerque, I don't think the answers would have been all that much different. There was one guy in there that said, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Well, I talked to this guy a little bit after, I talked to each one for just a few minutes afterwards, but this was the one guy that claimed he was a Christian. He said, well, we'll just have to wait and see. You know, so the level and the depths of spiritual maturity was really, I don't know, even with this particular guy. But there were a group of about 4 or 5 teenage boys, and that's the answer was, well, it just goes black, and then you spawn in as another person. And I thought, wow, that's a good one. I haven't heard that before.
It's a video game.
From a video game.
Yeah,
that's what they learn on video games. So we had video game theology and all kinds of, and they just decompose. And, you know, these were some nice people. I mean, they were friendly, warm, they were smiling. It was a beautiful day, and they were happy to answer the question. And this was what they believed. This is the world we live in today. I mean, so out of that, my wife and I, we just took this like one step at a time. Like we shot this video, had it edited, and I showed it to a few people, and I showed it to my pastor, and it just jaw drops. He said, I can't believe this, you know. And I showed it to another pastor, a chaplain at the Denver County Jail, and the first thing he says is, we've got some work to do. But this, we kind of suspect this in the secular community nowadays, but they hear it in their own words, just unashamedly. This is what I believe. Yeah, we're just decomposed. That's it. You know, there's nothing after this life. So they had a theology and a belief around the afterlife. My question, though, is, are they about to experience a shocking reality? And if so, what do we do about that as followers of Jesus? So I After we edited this, because we shot it last August 26th, and we had it edited September 2nd, and I shared it around with a few people, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, what where I go just now, and, you know, since then, I showed it to a couple of buddies that used to support our Changing Lives Foundation jail ministry, and a couple of them said, look, if you want to throw a website together, we'll pay for it, just let us know what it costs, and we'll just take care of the website. So a couple guys took care of us. We put a website up. We ended up with a website, and I got some newsletters. I'm going to leave here about a dozen or so that with links that you can go to if you want to look at this online and so forth. But we also thought, well, we'll put it up on social media. So we created a website called What About Hell Ministry, and we've got a Facebook page, What About Hell. So she spends $5 a day on ads with Facebook, not a huge budget, $5 a day. And so we get these little ads that pop up. If you're streaming, I haven't really been a fan of social media at all, but once we started this, I got on Facebook. And so there's ads that come up in between different links and so forth. So that was actually 12 weeks ago today that Facebook page went live. And we have had 7,000 Christians share my website on our Facebook page. And we had no idea, when we put it up, we had no idea. We thought, well, we've done a good work, we've created this thing, we'll put it up there, and if somebody likes it, then it prompts them to investigate their own afterlife and spiritual things, then that's wonderful. We did not sit down and say, well, gee, I wonder how many people would share it. Yeah. That never even was in our discussion. In fact, we thought we were done at that point. But we had 7,000 people share that on Facebook. Now, to me, that's kind of a hard share. If I'm going on Facebook and I see this website called What About Hell, you know, and am I going to share that on my Facebook page? Because what I'm doing when I do that is I'm putting that in front of all my friends on Facebook. The average Facebook person has 245 friends. So when they put that on their Facebook page, at least a dozen or so are going to see this because it goes into their stream on their Facebook page and they can see it. So so again, it kind of bold to share this, I think, but that's a way for a person to reach out a little bit. In other words, they want their friends, neighbors, relatives to maybe stumble onto this and reflect on their eternal destiny. Then I used to do some radio shows in Denver with Crawford Broadcasting. They've got about 24 radio stations around the country. When I had Changing Lives Foundation, jail ministry, addiction ministry, I go down there and do interviews with Mike Trim is the guy that runs the station in Denver. And so I mentioned this to him. He said, well, come on down, let's do a show on that. So we did a radio interview a couple weeks ago. And I'm going back down on Wednesday to do two more. He just loves this. In fact, in the newsletters that I'm going to leave here, there's a link. You type that link in exactly the way it is on the newsletter. You can, the interview will pop up. So we're doing 14-minute interviews, and I've got pretty much an open door to do this as many as I want. I really like what we're doing. I had another buddy that saw the website, and he said, well, you know, that's a nice website. It could be a lot nicer. And I thought, well, and this guy's a professional. I mean, he's very successful. Web designer, search engine optimization company out of, he's in Kentucky. It used to be here. In fact, when we had our Changing Lives Foundation ministry, I asked him about a website, but I couldn't afford it. It was too expensive. So he said, I saw your website. He said, the Lord's prompted me to help you with this. I'm going to redo your website for you for free. So, you know, these things are just happening without any effort really on my part, hardly at all. On the website, we've got frequently asked questions. I teach the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, and I have commentary on all the verses. And I sent again just a handful of people to see what kind of feedback I got. And those accolades that we got back from those people are on our website as well. Just glowing accolades. Oh, this is awesome. They really like it. And so I thought, well, I wonder, I haven't talked to my old high school girlfriend in a long, long time. She still lives on Marco Island, Florida. And she thought, well, this looks really good to me. She said, I'm going to talk to the church and see if they might want you to come down. And so now I'm scheduled to go down to Marco Island and preach the sermon of the parable of rich man and Lazarus. Mm-hmm. At the church that I went forward at, in fact, I'm scheduled to be there the first weekend in February coming up. That was the first weekend in February in 1980 that I went forward. So 44 years ago. So I'm invited to go back and preach this sermon. So our key book that we use and feature on our website is called Whatever Happened to Hell by John Blanchard. It's a thorough and exhaustive look at the afterlife. He's a real conservative Christian guy. He's got 18 million books in print, translated to 60 different languages. And so once we got all this set up and featured the book on the websites, and I'm trying to buy them off of Amazon, and I'm having trouble buying them. So I thought, they don't really have any. So I called the publisher and said, oh, the book's out of print. Mm-hmm. I thought, here we're featuring this book, and now it's out of print. And he said, but we'll print them for you, though, if you want to buy 50 or 100 at a time. So I'm buying 50 or 100 at a time from the publisher out of England. And one of the things, this guy's, he holds the traditional conservative, old school Christian view of the afterlife. In other words, when we step into eternity, we can step into a perfect world with God the Father, Jesus, the saints, and live an adventurous eternity, or step into hell, which would be the exact opposite, a horrific eternity. And that's where the rub comes in. Most people, even in the church, really aren't quite sure what they believe about hell. It's not a popular topic at cocktail parties or whatever. What do you think about hell? But we need to think about that at some point. And he talks about, in the very beginning, he says, he talks about the whole, he says, Christian evangelists ought to give a teaching on hell as part of their job. A little farther down on the same page, he says, academics sometimes look down on evangelists for affirming that hell is real and eternal. But they would be wiser to look up to them, for while the academics in their ivory towers can weigh notion against notion and finally avoid embracing any ideas at all, the evangelists stand at the church's front line. A little farther on, he says, back to fantasy. Hell seems to have fallen on hard times. And he quotes some polls. He said in 1978, 70% of people in America believed in hell. A few years later, a Newsweek poll had the number down to 58%. A few years after that, it was down to 24%. One author, surveyor, said that even those numbers are probably exaggerated. And one other guy said, at some point in the 1960s, hell just disappeared. No one could say for sure what happened. First it was here, and then it wasn't. Rob Bell wrote his famous book, Love Wins. The universalist believes everybody's going to hell. Everybody. everybody's ever lived is going, I mean, is going to heaven. And then there's annihilationism where everybody eventually just poofs into nothing. If either in heaven or you poof into nothing. And, you know, Jesus taught on hell, and I'm watching my time here, I don't want to, but one of his, in fact, the word hell is only found 14 times in the whole Bible, all in the New Testament. Now, there's other references to Sheol and Hades and Gehenna and all that, but hell itself is only 14 times. Once by Peter, once by James, 12 times by Jesus. And in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, and we've heard that parable, we've read that, probably everybody's heard that, I've read that. How many have ever heard a sermon on Sunday on the parable of the rich man and Lazarus? Anybody heard one? I got two hands, three hands, okay, all right. I've never heard one, but anyways, the parable is about a rich man and a beggar. Rich man that goes about his day, dressed in purple, steps over his beggar to go on his day, ignoring the guy altogether. And then eventually they both die. So now they're on equal ground. They're both equal. And so it says that the beggar is in, with Abraham, which is a reference to paradise, and the rich man is in hell, where he's in torment. And then the rich man is asking Abraham, he says, send Lazarus to get some water and just dip the tip of his finger and put it on my tongue because I'm in torment in this in hell. And so the rich man who totally ignored Lazarus and his needs now is begging for Lazarus to come and help with his need being in hell. And then Abraham says, you know, you're over there, I'm over here, there's no crossing over. We can't go to you and you can't come to us. So, and then the rich man finally says, well, at least send Lazarus to warn my five brothers. I got five brothers that are probably living a life just like he was living. Warn them so that they repent and not come to this place of torment. And then finally Lazarus, after a couple of pleas from the rich man, Lazarus said, look, they've got the scriptures, they've got all the Old Testament. That should be enough. And if that's not enough, they won't believe even if someone rises from the dead. Meaning like the brothers would have known that Lazarus died, then he came back to life. He came to warn them. And Abraham says, even if someone rises from the dead, certain people, and not the scriptures, that should be enough. But some won't believe. So what does that mean for us today? I think that not all of us have the gift of evangelism. It's a very awkward thing to talk to our friend, neighbor, relative about. You know, there's little subtle opportunities to sometimes to drop a hint. But if I believe in a literal hell, a real place, a place of torment, a place of no escape, what difference does it make? It makes all the difference in the world. Because that should prompt me to do something for the kingdom, something a little bit more. I don't want to go to Africa, but I'll help support a missionary who doesn't want to go to Africa. There's a few major beliefs about the afterlife within the church and within the secular world. We know that most of the secular world believes that, well, my good is going to outweigh my bad, so I'll be okay in the end. That's the whole theology. There's a belief, like some of these guys were saying, you just decompose, there's nothing after this life. A belief in annihilationism, that we just poof into nothing. And then the belief in a literal hell of all eternity is almost no one has that belief, very few even in the church. And this is not something you pound away at every Sunday. And you know, John MacArthur did a 6-week Sunday sermon series on this parable. I just wonder if like the crowd got a little smaller each week. I don't know. But you know, and John MacArthur in his book Parables, which is one of the books I used to do some research on, it says that this parable was meant to be shocking on purpose, because we need to be shocked, especially, in fact, I think my belief is that when Jesus taught this parable in the first century, he had the 21st century in mind when he taught it. And the reason I say that is because we have never been a more distracted people group ever. And you can't hardly be much more. We live in a 24/7, 365 world. It's always on. In 1990, there were 3 million people at internet service in the world. Today, there are 4,900 million people that have internet service. 85% of Americans have internet service and spend about 7 hours a day in front of a screen. Whether that's work-related, which is important, then there's movies, but there are 2.5 hours of social media. 2.5 hours of social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. So that's why we chose to go with social media to get the message out. Social media is the new town square. That's where everybody goes to get their information, they chat, they get ideas. All these people that got these ideas, but when you saw that video, all of them got up on social media. So that's where we're trying to meet people where they are, and it's going really well. I've got newsletters, and you can listen to this interview that I did down in Denver. If you want, you can sign up and get our blog sent to you every time we put up a blog post. So thanks for having me.
Amen.
5 minutes over, and I'm on the time.
Thank you.